Thank you. It's great to be here. I hope the sound is okay. Usually I am in person at these kind of events, but I heard there's 340 people there. That's amazing. That's a really large group, and want to thank you for coming. And it's really fun for me to be here and also to be with my daughter, Andrea, who we've done lots of work together, and this is a real blessing for me that I can continue to work and to have her as my partner. So, Andrea, do you want to just say a few words here?
Yeah. Hi, everyone. It's also nice to be here. I have great memories of visiting Denmark as when I was young, and we're just really happy to be here and really looking forward to this time together. So thank you for welcoming us onto your screen and into your space today.
I want to just start with a short story, and then we'll do a land acknowledgement. That when Andrea was a child, she was in Scandinavia with us, of course, and our other two children, and she had very blonde hair, and it was midsummer, and so she was out dancing with a bunch of other children in the park, and there were lots of tourists that would come by, and they would say, "Look at that typical Scandinavian girl, and let's take a picture." So there's many pictures of Andrea that have gone back to America about a typical Scandinavian girl. So here she is with you today.
I remember being told, just don't say anything. Don't talk. Then they'll never know. Yes, I remember that very well. So why don't we start with a land acknowledgement, and something that we do here in Canada is we're having these really big conversations with Indigenous communities about reconciliation and about what it means to live together on this land that doesn't actually belong to us. And so we do land acknowledgements here as a way of recognizing that we are really guests on land that has been taken from the Indigenous communities many, many years ago. So the land that we're on right now is, and this is actually the place, I live in the same place that I grew up. I'm going to share my screen while I talk to you here. And Lottie, can I, just wondering if I can share my screen. I live just outside of Vancouver in a small town that we call Richmond. But before it was ever known as Richmond, I will acknowledge that this is also the unceded territory of the Coast Salish Indigenous peoples. And that's a very broad community of Indigenous people. And so to be more specific, it was the Hunkiminum language group that would come, and they would come and live on this land. So I will share my screen and show you what that looks like. So here we are. There we go. So this is a drone photo of where we are and the land that we live on. So this is the what would have happened and what I've learned. And this is really a learning process. But what we've learned is that the Hunkiminum language group, they would come and they would camp on the shores and they would fish and they would gather berries. Here's another shot of it. You can see that now it's quite close to a fishing village, and they would come and they would camp and gather berries and resources that they would then take with them back to their more permanent homes for the winter. And so it really was a place of gathering and a place of gathering resources and coming together as a community to do that. And I love how that connection in many ways connects to the work that we do, where we get together. We're here today gathering resources to bring back to your communities. And so I just want to say that we're grateful for this land and this place that we're in. Norm, do you want to
Yeah, I think that in working with Indigenous people, one of the things that I've learned, and I've done quite a bit of work in this area, and it all, and I think it was really important that it started with a request from them. So often what happens is that the European settlers came in. And they did things to and for the indigenous people, many of which hurt them over the years. You probably have heard things about the residential schools and some of the ways in which they were trying to be educated or re-educated and harmed in that process. And so there's a lot of very negative history in that relationship. But at the same time, there are so many, many good people and a real willingness on both sides to come together and work together. And I was approached, probably 25 years ago by a fellow by the name of Rod McCormick, who was a from the Mohawk Nation. And he said, we don't have anything here really on career development. This is something that's new to us, and I think I'd like to work together. And I think that's a real key point here is work together, And he had looked at and seen some of the work that I was doing on something I called active engagement. He said, "This is exactly the kind of approach that we need to have with our people, and would you be willing to be a part of that?" And so I was, and myself and Gray Ponell and a few others, we got engaged with him and developed something called Guiding Circles. And that approach has gone, all through Canada and also into and through Australia as well. And it continues to this day. So that's kind of a foundation for the work we've been doing.
I think it's important too to like you what you said, the idea of really learning together. And I mean, even talking about it and what you're hearing us talk about right now, this is something we're learning how to do better. And we're always learning and listening, and so we can learn. And that really is the approach that we even take into the work we do with Indigenous communities is how can we learn together to do this better? And that's really a starting point that we start at.
So, I mean, what does it actually mean? What were some of these things that the Indigenous people really appreciated? And one of it was the relationships. We focus a lot on something we call mattering, which I think we probably talked about the last time we were together. They love imagery and circles and roadmaps and something called the backswing, which is a real important concept for them. And just to give you an example of that, when I had the chance to work with some indigenous groups and the government, and we were looking at ways in which they could be helped into employment. And the government was looking at recruitment and retention. How do they recruit more Indigenous people, and how do they retain them once they get there? And I introduced the idea of a third element, that being, we need readiness, and then recruitment. And I talked about a backswing. And if you think about the fact that in moving anything forward, you first have to go back. And then you go forward. Think about a hammer, a broom, a golf club. The physical world is made in such a way that we always go backwards and then we go forward. And so what I really brought into the conversation between these groups was the idea that we need to go backwards to sort of rebuild our strength, to build energy, and this is really the reconciliation. right, that we're engaged in right now? Is this reconciliation? We need to have those conversations and go backwards. And when that strength is there, then you go forward. And so I think we are really in a, you know, for us as a people and many other indigenous groups, they need to be focused on the idea of readiness. Andrea and I did a workshop in, a couple of workshops in, or spoke to groups in Greenland, you know, and the same kind of issues come up. All about relationships, all about community. They have very heavy emphasis on balance and the need for a balanced life. You know, is it mental? Is it physical, emotional, spiritual? Always working towards a balance. And they love a more active learning approach to do things, exercises. And that's some of what we're going to do today, is we're going to do some exercises, some of the exercises that we've done with them and with many other groups. It isn't just, it's not like this indigenous approach is just for them, It's something that we can learn from them. They can learn from us. We can work together. And we've done this with groups of many different types of groups. Here's one of the people we worked with is Deborah Bob from the First Nations Center for Excellence in our province of British Columbia. And, you know, her comment about how important active engagement has been for her. And that, you know, this is a way that they have found very useful for them in career development as a way in which they can engage with their people and sort of move forward. So let's start with mattering, the important, and this is really something that comes out of sociology, and it's just such a basic concept. The idea that, you know, how do we help our clients to realize that they matter? How do we make other people see that? And one of it is through attention. It's through focusing on people, taking time for them, making eye contact. You can always tell when somebody, you know, if somebody's angry with you or having trouble, what do they do? What's the first thing that happens? They don't look at you. They walk away, you know, that kind of nose in the air and off they go. That's that attention. So focusing on people, making contact. And really the listening then to what they're saying is where importance, feeling that they have something to contribute, not just to receive, but to contribute. And sort of recognizing others. And this happens with Indigenous people. It happens across the generations. I mean, I have learned so much from Andrea. Another topic that I will be talking about on another day is intergenerational mentoring. The idea of learning from others, whether they're younger, whether they're different cultural groups, whatever, placing importance in what they're saying and in moving ahead on that basis. And sometimes it's reliance, not just saying, oh yeah, that was really nice what you said, but really counting on people. People like to be needed. They like to feel that that without their input, this wouldn't go forward. And they pick up whether there's a personal caring here, whether you are actually personally invested in that relationship, you know, that they get a sense of that you care about them more than just a client, another number coming through the door, that you care about them as a person. And there is a sense of appreciation that you and, you know, you say things to them. And appreciation is really the feedback giving. This is the time when you start telling people where you build a sense of confidence and self-esteem by telling people and showing people the kind of things they're doing well. And this is so important, especially when you're dealing with people who have low self-esteem or high anxiety.
This is something I find, I feel like we can't talk about anything else without first talking about mattering. I think it's so incredibly foundational to the work that we do. And something that can be really interesting in this opportunity to learn from each other and learn from other industries and other areas in our lives. And you think about, like, when you go to a restaurant, how do they show you that you matter? And sometimes I like to kind of play the game where I think, okay, how have I been shown that I matter? What are the big ideas that maybe I could bring over into my own space of work? What could I learn from these different industries? And we even look at, like, tech companies and how do they all are sort of notorious for having ping pong tables and pool tables and all these fun things in them that are sometimes we can roll our eyes at. But what could we learn from these different groups that we could borrow and bring into the work that we do in order to increase a sense of mattering? And I bet even, like, we were here actually yesterday in your space doing a bit of a practice with Benny and Lottie, and that we could see that the tables were all set out in lines. You all had papers on the table ready for you to come in. They were checking the microphones and the sound, making sure that it worked and we could hear each other. So all those things that we even came and did here yesterday were all little acts of mattering in support of your experience today. And it was yesterday for us. I don't know what time it was there. But these are just these little moments where what could we do and learn together from each other that we could bring over and apply directly in the work you do with your clients? So let's maybe do an exercise. This is something that we really like doing with clients initially, just at the beginning when we're starting to have a conversation. Sometimes it's so easy to jump straight into the work of what it is we're doing, but forget to just get to know them a little bit. So let's do an exercise and we'll get to know you maybe, or you'll get to know each other a little bit. So just take a moment and write down a list of things that you enjoy doing. We'll give you like 2 minutes. Just write down a list. What are things you do for fun? They don't have to be work related. It can be anything.
Maybe if you don't share your screen, Andrea.
Yeah.
Then we can see them.
All right, you have 30 seconds left. All right. How did that go? Sometimes we can get so easily caught up in the work and the vision of what we have for the clients that we meet with that we forget to take a moment and really take care of that mattering and just making sure we now understand and can see who they are and just who they are as people and connect with them in a more real way. So what we notice when we look at these, let me just check here. Okay, you can stop them. Thanks, Bhatti.
Ja, så skal jeg stoppe jer nu.
I love how you could just see, even just asking you to write that. Oh, okay. Sure, thanks, Lottie. Okay, how's that? Can you hear me? I love how we asked you just to write down some things that you enjoy doing, and just the volume goes up, and I could hear you, I see you laughing and talking, and think like, oh, even just in that little act right there of just writing down some things you enjoy, you can see how the engagement in maybe the each other changes, and you start connecting maybe in a different way. And sometimes this can be hard to do for some clients, or sometimes they have short lists or long lists, but we can always learn from these, the lists that have things that they enjoy doing. And it really is a great way for us to be able to see them as a person and really start connecting. When I work with clients, you know, you might say, oh, you like biking. So do I. Like, tell me more about that. And we'll have conversations that suddenly go beyond, this is my challenge, to this is who I am as a person. And it just really broadens who they are and how you can connect with them. Norm, do you want to talk?
Yeah, this is incredibly important. I mean, and for a game, going back to the indigenous perspective, they really love the idea that you get to know them as a person before you start solving a problem. I think so many people in our profession were used to, you know, they're used to coming in and telling you a problem, and you're used to sort of working with them on this. But what if you said, before I get to the problem, I just want to get to know you a little bit as a person, you know, stop them. Because you get into that sort of dance together, right? And it's a dance. It's sort of they come in, they tell you the problem, you then provide your service, and it goes back and forth. But what if you said, before we start this dance, I would really like to just find out about who you are and tell me something about yourself. And starting from that very basic part of learning who they are, and some people they call this chit chat. They say, well, it's sort of a waste of time, but I guess we have to do it. But I think there's so much in this that you can learn about a people. And by looking at the kind of things that they have on their list, the patterns that emerge there, you know, as you hear from people, you're going to hear things like, oh, do they like doing things by themselves, or do they like doing things in groups? You know, what is it about, are they organizers? Do they organize the group, you know, or do they sort of, are they just a participant that joins in with other people? How often do they get to do these activities? You know, is this something you do all the time, or is it something, you know, oh, I've done that. I really love playing tennis. Oh, that's great. When was the last time you did it? Oh, 6 years ago, you know, like, letting people tell you little bits about themselves. And this also really helps us when we work with metaphors, when you work with images for people, because you can then speak in ways that sort of connect to their experience. You know, for myself, I grew up playing hockey, so I can use all kinds of hockey metaphors with people. But for many people, they have no idea what I'm talking about if I talk about hockey. And so I need to come into their world, you know, when whether that's the world of dance or whether it's the world of theater or whatever their things that they enjoy doing, cooking, you know, I need to learn. And it doesn't matter if you're not an expert. In some ways, it's kind of even useful because you can say, oh, You like cooking. Well, what sort of things? I don't do that so much. You tell me what kind of, you ask questions. You learn about them and what it is they do. And that builds the relationship.
Yeah. It's such a valuable exercise to do. And it can be done really formally like this, but also just in conversation. It can be built in. And it really is something that helps them to start expanding their imagination and getting out of that I need my problem fixed and you're the person who's going to do that for me. It really helps to start build a relationship, which we've talked about, which is so important. I always think that the conversation with clients and the work that you do actually, I think, begins at the moment they reach out and contact your center, and the opportunity to start expressing mattering and showing that they're important and that they have value begins at that point. And the work that you do with them really then just can become an extension into that. And so let's take a moment though and look at these lists. If you look at the list that you wrote down, the interesting piece in this is really that learning together. And if you look at what's on your list, there may be a number of you who maybe have, I don't know, hockey on your list. Maybe not. It would not be on my list. Or something else, walking or being outside or playing the piano. You may have a similar activity, but the way that you engage in it can sometimes be probably very, very different from each other. I worked with a number of clients I do this with, but two that come to mind. I had one client that I worked with who had the outdoors on his list. And then I had another client who had the outdoors on her list. But when I started asking questions about it, one of them liked going and hiking by herself, taking her dog with her, and that was her time to think and spend time on her own. My other client, that was the time for an adventure. And he was the planner, and he would gather his friends together and make a big plan, and they'd go off into the mountains for a day or two camping and hiking. Very different experiences, but the same word. And so we want to take a moment and really look at how is it that you engage in the activities that you've written on your list. And as you start thinking about that, you may start being able to notice some patterns that emerge about who you are, what's important to you, or the ways that you like to engage in the world around you. So take a moment and look at your list. And maybe what we'll do is say, turn to the person next to you. Look at your list and then share your list with that person, or two or three, however many make sense at your tables, and have a conversation. What are the patterns that you see in your list? And maybe you can help the person you're working with also see some patterns in theirs. We'll give you about 7 minutes.
Let's make it 5.
Okay.
5 minutes is enough. Can you see them working?
Yeah. I'm gonna text you.
Okay.
Just mute yourself.
Okay.
Ja, så er de 5 minutter gået. Ja, jeg er så ked af det. Godt. Og så skal der være absolut tystner, eller hvad det er. Eller hvad hedder det? Fuldstændig tystner. Så kommer den.
All right. Okay. How did that go? I wish we could come and walk around and talk to all of you, but like thumbs up, thumbs down. No one's going to do thumbs down. Well, maybe you will.
This is Denmark. Don't forget.
Great. Yeah, this is something, it's so easy. Like, it's so easy and so easy to just bring into conversation. But the information that you can learn about somebody in just this short amount of time is so valuable and can help you influence the ways that you work with your clients as you progress with them. Especially, I always love to start taking note as soon as I start meeting a client of possible metaphors that could be brought into conversation, ways that I could connect with them for them to better understand their situation. Clients often come with a story that they've been telling themselves, telling their friends about the problem or the challenge that they're facing. And so if we can find different ways to start learning from them and connecting with them and then exploring what it is that they're facing from just a different perspective that kind of bumps them out of that rut of the story that they're used to telling and gives them a new way to understand it, then we can really start doing the work we need to do, because we're not just repeating a story that they've told everybody, including themselves, for such a long time.
Let me give you an example. One of the clients I was working with, he was actually a national curler. I know that Denmark has a good curling team, and maybe you know what curling is, or you've heard about it, at least. And he was having a lot of career problems, and he came and he couldn't make decisions, and you know, he was struggling. And one of the things, and this is really working with metaphors, where you sort of take curling and you say, you know, what were some of the strategies that you used as a curler? You know, like in curling, you have to sort of, there's rocks moving around and you have to figure things out. And how could we take, and this is really a metaphoric way of thinking, where you sort of say, let's look at curling and see some of the strategies there and say, couldn't we bring that over and apply it to the situation you're in right now? And all of a sudden, he just got it. It was like, yes. And then he was just off. You know, he then had an image, a picture of what he could do and how, and because he knew what to do in a curling situation. He was very good at that. But he hadn't thought of applying any of that learning, any of that perspective to the current situation. So these kind of very seemingly innocuous chit-chat type of conversations can lead you in some into really some good understanding here.
Why don't we talk a little bit about working with metaphors and how, what this could look like and how to actually do that. Metaphors, they're so incredibly powerful. And if this is something that you can get used to hearing and start really tuning into the metaphors that your clients are using in your conversation, or bringing them in from the things you know that they enjoy doing, it really just can change the whole trajectory of your conversation. And it really almost shortcuts the work that you can do together, because you're talking and understanding it together in a much deeper way, much, much more quickly. Sometimes people hear about these creative approaches to career conversations and you think, well, I don't have time for that. I have work to do with my client. But actually, many of these approaches really give you almost these shortcuts to understanding much more deeply in much more meaningful ways, very, very quickly. I'm going to share my screen again here, and we will talk you through some metaphors.
I've worked with metaphors my whole career, with the visual images people have. The first thing to do is identify what you're hearing. I think we're so, you know, one of the things that is just central to career development right now is storytelling. Hearing stories, you know, they would call it a narrative, or, you know, whatever you want to say about it, the idea of hearing stories. And stories are full of metaphors. When people are talking, they're using metaphors all the time. And one of the challenges for us is, do we really hear them? You know, because a lot of these images just go by us so quickly, we don't really pay attention to it. And so one of the things I think we've really taught, you know, we've taught a lot about feelings, and that's been incorporated into the work we do, but I don't think we've done enough with imagery, with the metaphors, with learning to hear that kind of thing. And so we almost need to have a metaphoric ear that listens to the images that the other person is bringing up. I had one person I was working with who was a counselor, and she said, well, I'm not like you. She says, I don't think in metaphors. I don't use them. I said, okay, well, that's good. So how are things? And then I asked her how things were at work. And she said, well, it's challenging right now. I feel like I'm walking on eggshells. So I stood up and I walked around her and we talked. You know, she didn't even hear it though. I'm walking on eggshells. Well, that's a metaphor, an image. So the first part of working with metaphors is learning to hear them, to identify them, to listen for them, to see where they are. And sometimes you have to even ask people. So if you had to put that into an image, what would that look like? You know, but anyway, having something to work with. And then you start elaborating it. You know, what does it mean? You know, so if the metaphor, they were, you know, I feel like I'm at the edge of a cliff ready to fall in, you know, to the water or something. What do they mean by that? What is that actually? And actually, Andrew, you have a really interesting story about elaboration. Maybe I'll let you do that.
I was working with a client and she came to me and she kind of knew that I liked metaphors. But she came to me and she said, I feel like I'm standing on the edge of a cliff and I'm ready to jump. And so her backstory a little bit was she was a guidance counselor. She worked at a university as an advisor and she was burnt out and exhausted and probably overworked. And she was on medical leave because of her burnout was so severe. And so she came to see me and said, you know, I don't think I can go back to the work I was doing. I don't know what's ahead of me. I just feel like I'm standing on the edge of a cliff. And so we talked a little bit about it. And she said, I'm not in danger. This isn't something where it's dangerous. There's water below me. I'm okay. But I just feel like I'm about to jump and I don't really know what to do. And it's scary. So as we talked a bit more about it, and I said, you know, when I was younger, I grew up and we used to actually go cliff jumping. And for me, it was kind of a fun experience. Like we would go and we would intentionally jump off of cliffs. And she said, oh, yeah, I did too. She grew up in Italy. And she said, yeah, actually, I did that all the time with my friends too. And she said, it was actually really fun. And so I said, you know, I wonder if you're actually not getting ready to sort of jump off this cliff in fear, but maybe you're getting ready to soar. And as we started talking about that shift in perspective, going from jumping into the unknown to willingly soaring into something new, everything just sort of shifted for her. And we talked a lot about, she said, oh, there's someone in the water waiting for me with a rowboat and so I can go and swim to this boat and get in and he'll, you know, I think it was her husband that she kind of identified. And, we talked about a lot of things. We talked about that backswing of when you're getting ready to jump, you don't just stand at the edge and jump, but maybe there's like a running up to it and then leaping that happens. So you can actually go even farther. And there's that backswing. And for her, what that backswing meant was going and pausing and caring for herself and her own mental health before jumping into something new immediately. And so she did that. She paused for about a month and just cared for herself and rested. And then she came back when she was ready to start thinking again about that leap and what that would look like. We talked about our own relationship too. But Norm, do you want to explain extending and reshaping and we can...
Sure. I mean, what Andrea is really talking about here is, first of all, there's the elaborating, which is the understanding of what the metaphor was. And then you start extending it and, you know, you have the person in the rowboat down below and things like that. And you can do things with time. You can say, was it always like this? Or what would it have looked like 6 months ago? You know, so you can sort of move it around in terms of the future, the past. And then you start reshaping it. And did you hear how, you know, what Andrea was talking about is the fact about soaring and, you know, and taking a running leap and, you know, and then you look at things like the hopefulness in that story. You know, this isn't a suicide picture. This is a picture of somebody who's kind of leaping into something. And what's the nature of the relationships and who's taking responsibility for doing this? And what sort of, do they have a sense of direction? and agency? Are they doing it? Are they generating their own momentum, or is somebody pushing them? All of these are ways of kind of making it better. And then you have application, which is, and now let's take this new image and bring it forward into what you're doing. So this is kind of like a process you work when you're working with a metaphor. This is a process that you can learn and use to really help you develop it. And sometimes you'll get to a new metaphor. Sometimes it'll be the same metaphor. Maybe you change it, or you just change it slightly. I mean, what Andrea's done here is she's taken the image she had, and she's kind of added elements. There's an element now of running and jumping and having big a boat at the bottom, you know, so it's become much more positive. And through that elaboration and reshaping, you get something now that kind of gives direction. And this is what you're doing, is really seeking out metaphors that help provide direction for living. And that's what we have here.
And I can tell you the end of the story at the end, when we finished working together in our last session, we circled back to, sometimes metaphors can carry you through all of the sessions that you're connecting with your client on. And at the end, I said, you know, where are we? Like, where are we with this metaphor and this cliff? She said, oh no, now I'm skydiving. And we talked about our own relationship, and she said, I'm skydiving. And, you know, we were kind of tethered together, and you were like my skydiving instructor, but she said, I'm ready to let go, and I'm ready to go and to kind of go do my own thing and skydive on my own now. And a year later, I had the chance to reconnect with her again. And she still had that image in mind. And she said, I'm doing so much more than I ever imagined a year ago. And I wish I could go back and tell myself where I am today, and just the how far she has gotten in her own career now. She's now self-employed and is really thriving in her work. But that image of cliff jumping has followed her through this year. And it's the kind of the pivotal conversation for her that helped make that difference in still today.
Okay, should we move?
Yeah, I wonder if it would be interesting to just take a look back again at that list that you wrote, and just quickly look at it and just think about, like, where are the metaphors for you? Like, if you have, maybe in reference to your own career journey, or maybe in reference to something else that's happening in your life, how could you connect those things to metaphors? And that might be something you want to take away and think about later. But where are your metaphors?
Every time to quit, we can go past that one.
All right, we'll let you chatting. Give them a minute to talk.
Yeah, maybe we can see them. Can you see them, Mike?
Yeah. Here. Can you see that?
Yeah. Are we going to do the 2-3 chair?
Yeah. Lottie, can you hear us? we'll just let them talk for a minute, but could you, those three chairs, could you set them up in front of the screen? The chairs, could you put the chairs out in front?
They're set up, Andrea.
Oh, perfect. Great. That's great. Thank you. We'll give them like one more minute. One more minute. One more minute, and we can call them back. Yeah. Okay. Oh no, sorry. One more minute, and then we'll. Okay. How are we doing?
They like talking together.
Oh, it's That's fine. Maybe we just talk about.
Ja, så vi tilbage igen. Ja, det godt. Det en lille smule fætter- og kusinefest, det ved jeg godt, men nu er vi heroppe på skærmen igen.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, Lottie.
Well, I think we want to now talk a little bit about some of the exercises that we use for, and we call have a big title. We call vantage points, different perspectives. One of the nice things about working visually is that you can change and you can give yourself different perspectives, a different vantage, looking at it this way or looking at it that way. And there's a number of different activities. I'm not sure how many we can get through, but just to give you some examples of the kind of work we do, one has to, and you can see up at the front, there's three chairs sitting there. And we often in our work, we and this isn't Gestalt therapy or something like that, for those of you who are of a psychological background, we use those chair, we use chairs to help people think about different perspectives that they have. And Andrea, I think you've had a really you had an interesting case in using three chairs, and maybe I'll just let you share that with them and describe the situation and how you used, in a sense, three chairs, but used them actually within a living room that you were talking about.
Yeah, so in a lot of the work I do is actually over the phone. I rarely meet with clients. Primarily we work over the phone. And the thing that to think about, we're going to talk through some of these more physical movement exercises, but they can be done when you're not in a shared space. I worked the client I'm going to tell you about, I worked with him over probably 6 months or so. We would connect, and I never even saw him. I had no idea. I could walk right past him and wouldn't even know who he was. But the way that we were able to develop trust in a way that he was, we could talk through even the physical exercises that we were working on together. And so what his story was he had been working and had been let go. And so it was really at this point, he was quite young, I think in his 20s, and was at this point in his life where he was saying, I have to make a decision about what's next. And as we talked, the three options that he was trying to pick between or think through was either going back and finding another job, going to school and maybe going and getting his degree or his master, I'm not sure what, going back into education. Or the third one was self-employment. And so he was trying to think about which one was the best for him, what the options were. And so what I did is I had him, he would sit in his living room and talk to me. And so I said, okay, we're going to use three chairs to think about this. And so we named each of the chairs a different decision. And so if you see the three chairs on the stage, if you imagine what he would do is he would go and I'd say, okay, go sit in this chair number one. Now talk to me about your life if you choose self-employment. What does your life look like from that position in that chair? And he would go and sit in his chair and he would talk about it from that perspective. I'd say, okay, now go sit in the chair in the other chair and talk to me about what your life is like if you choose to go back to work and find work. And he'd go sit in that chair and we would talk about it from that perspective as though he had made that decision. And then the third chair, we would do the same. And so as we would worked our way through these three chairs and started to understand what life was like, what was involved in it. He started noticing there were different areas that were really things that he needed to pay attention to or that were going to be the challenges then. And eventually what I did is I said, okay, now you're the coach. And so go sit in the chairs. What are the questions that you need to be asked as you make a decision about each of these different areas? And so he then went back and sat in each of these chairs. And well, in this chair, I need to be thinking about how I'm going to pay for school and where I'll live and what that means how I'm going to be able to support myself while I'm going here. So those are the questions that are coming up for him. And he started identifying just what it was that he needed to be asked in those spots. And finally, what happened is he ended up choosing self-employment, and he's now very happily self-employed and doing his own, running his own business in a way that he's very, I think, quite successful. But those three chairs, he said to me later on, he said, I don't walk through my living room the same anymore. Like now, every time I walk into this room, I see these three chairs and it reminds me of this decision that I've made and what I've chosen for my life and how valuable that was. So there's a real stickiness, we call it, to this type of work where now he not only is making a decision, but every time he looks at his chair, he's reminded of how he made that decision and the reasons for it.
I think one of the things about this exercise and using chairs is really problems sometimes come to us as a bit of a tangle. You know, you can see a thread, you know, a ball of thread all tangled together. And sometimes what we have to do is help people separate out those. And the chairs are ways of kind of framing the problem through a certain perspective, not having to listen to all the other voices, but just take it from that point of view. Okay, now take it from another point of view, and doing this in a very concrete way so that the person actually gets to sit there and they talk and they kind of go through that, and then they can move to another thing. And that very act of kind of separating out different perspectives is as soon as that separation happens, then you can decide what to do. And sometimes you can work where you, and then you say, okay, well, this chair then is the most important, and you push the other to a side. Or sometimes you'll say, oh, we could do both of those together, and you might even stack the chairs and say, we could do this and then this, or set them up in a row. Lots of different things, and we don't have time to go into all the different options, but that idea of making concrete the vantage points we have and using chairs or something else like that, that sort of sets people on a certain pathway. That's a really good way of learning to work with people using this kind of more visual, physical type of activity.
And maybe something just to mention, even with all of these different exercises that we're going to talk through, you don't have to be the expert in the exercise as well. With this client that I worked with, I gave him the parameters of it, and we designed it together in a way that worked for him. And that's that learning together and learning how this works best for them. And so by the end of the time working with him, I just said, like, okay, here's the exercise. We've already done it once. Go ahead. Tell me what you're doing. And he took me through it. And I just listened. And so you can really be entering into these exercises as a partnership, not as you needing to know all the steps in order for it to work. It's more about, what are you noticing? What else could we do? And how can we be playful in this experience of learning to help understand better? Okay, good. The next one. We're gonna try this. We're gonna see how this goes. So here we are, doing what I just told you. We're gonna try doing this with 340 people in one room, and we'll see what happens. So the next one we're gonna talk about is walking the problem, and it's known as vantage points itself. But this one is more of an experiential learning process where you're really it's almost like mapping, where you're thinking about, well, let's just do it. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to invite you all to stand up, and I'm going to ask you to do this quietly so you can still hear me talking. So just stand up wherever you are. I'm going to stand up with you.
Can you share your screen, Andrew?
Oh, sorry. There.
Let me see it.
Okay. I have to push a chair out of the way to be able to do this with you. Okay, so we're going to, and you all probably have pushed chairs out of your way as well. So what I'm going to do is, it's just invite you just for a minute, stand here and just write, like, here we are today. I'm in Canada, you're in Denmark, you're in a conference together, hopefully meeting some new people. Just take a moment, take a deep breath, kind of feel your feet, and let's just recognize where you are today. Think about, where are you today, right now, in this moment? And normally what I would do is I would ask you to look across the room, but right now there are 340 of you in a room. So I'll say, look ahead of you to a place where you could walk to. And it could be three steps in front of you, and that's okay. Just find any direction, any way where you can take maybe two or three steps. And if you call to mind a child, just look right now.
I skal bare kigge, I skal ikke bevæge jer.
Okay, so when you see, call to mind maybe a challenge that you're facing, or something that's happening right now that you're trying to figure out. And think about, what would the very best outcome be for that? When you have a sense of what that is, without all of the, but it won't work, but I know that it's not actually going to happen, let's leave those behind. And just walk, take those two or three steps over to that position of possibility. So I'm going to take three steps with you. So now you can walk over to that new space. And you may have to walk around things and bump into people. That's okay, I hope. Okay, so here you are. Look back at where you were. Think, how does it feel to now be standing in this space of success? This the very best finish that you could have hoped for. And there's kind of this space now that you've walked across. But look back to where you were standing initially. And from this perspective, what do you need to tell yourself? Or what would you like to yourself to hear from this best outcome? Now, there is a space in between that exists there. And for myself, I had to walk around a chair. But just walk yourself back when you're ready, back to the center of where you were. And as you do, think about what is it that is in this middle space for you? What is it that exists? Don't sit down yet. Stay standing where you are. But what is it in this middle space? I had to walk around my office chair. And maybe there's something that you had to kind of, maybe some barriers or something you had to get around, maybe even people and chairs that you had to get around. What could that represent? What does that represent for you? And sometimes what we think of as being like an office chair size problem maybe actually is just a piece of paper that can be stepped over. Or maybe there's another path, another way around that we couldn't see before. Or maybe it's a place to stop and rest and sit. And now turn around and look behind you. How far have you already come to get to even where you are today? What are the chairs and the tables and the people that you've had to navigate already to get to where you are right now? And this is a great opportunity to say, like, what are the strengths that you can choose to bring with you, that you already know that you have from those chairs and tables that you've had to navigate, all those the challenges in your life? What strengths can you claim and bring along? And maybe there are some things that need to be left behind as well. What are those? What can you choose to let go of today? And when you're ready, turn back around and look back those three steps ahead to where you walked before. How does that look now when you look out at that perfect outcome? What's changed? And I know even just to start moving across that space to those three steps, you had to take a first step. What is that first step? And even before you take a step, you have to sort of, I know I kind of had to swing my leg back a little bit. Here's that back swing again in order to propel myself forward. And I had to balance on one foot, regain my balance so that I would be able to shift my weight and step. What's the metaphor in that for you? Maybe you're swinging back in that backswing, or maybe you're rebalancing. Or maybe you have some momentum and you're already walking and it becomes an easier movement. When you're ready, come sit down and we'll talk about mapping a little bit and a little bit more here. All right. Norm, do you want to debrief this?
Hopefully.
Så er vi klar igen på skærmen.
This idea of moving and finding yourself, taking, and we can do this just through talking and thinking, but sometimes we need to move our bodies. And I think that's the key part in this exercise, is that you actually walk it, you know, that you are walking, you are moving, you are turning, and visualizing. So it's not just talking about it. It's just not visualizing it. It's actually getting people to walk their situation. And that this can be an incredibly powerful experience, where people get a sense of what's ahead, the steps they need to take, what they've already achieved. Yeah. Now we want to get to just the last piece, but we'd love to hear from you, maybe in the chat or, you know, afterwards, but we also want to talk about some mapping. But I think you're getting the idea here that we're making physical activities. We also have drawing activities, and maybe we could just talk a little bit about that. I mean, there are different kinds of maps. Someone today was Marianne, one of your keynote speakers, mentioned this map. And again, it's a way for people to look at themselves. So whether, you know, in what Andrea just did, you were sort of living and walking it, but you can also show people diagrams or pictures of, here's a roadmap, you know, starting points developed by Bill Borgen and myself. And here's another roadmap, a roller coaster of emotions. Where are you? Are you in a valley? Are you in a peak? Are you going down? All the different, you know, these are things, and some of you will have seen this in my earlier work, the idea of using these kind of maps to talk about problems. To, in a sense, what you're doing is you're externalizing, you're sort of looking at problems out there. And this is the map, Andrea, I'll let you talk about your own map. This is a map that you developed.
Yeah, this is a map that I made, and just another way of having conversations and having, inviting clients to notice where they are and where they want to be and where they're, or where they'd like to head. And so you can start talking about where you are, where you're going, and how are you gonna do it? How do you feel? And this is, it's something, yeah, it's great. It's I love showing it to people because they often immediately know where they are and they say, oh, this is exactly where I am right now. And then there's a conversation that you can have. This map, you can actually get, it's on our website, doubleknot.works, as a download. I think it's $10. It's not expensive, but you can buy it as a download if you want to print it. That's available there to go and explore.
Okay, this is, we just really briefly, we're running out of time, obviously. We run out of time as standard for us. But we've been doing quite a bit of work with something we call liminal space. And this word comes from the Latin word limen, which means threshold. It's the crossing over space. This is really a whole thing about transition. It's a space of transition, but it's a different kinds of transition. And you may be finding a lot of people, and maybe you are also feeling some transition in your own life in terms of being in a space where you are, you've moved out of something or something has changed for you, and you want to go forward, but it isn't exactly clear what's next. I mean, sometimes we talk about goal setting, like you've got this clear goal and you're just moving from step one to step two. And that's great. But for a lot of people, it's like, oh, I could go. There are many doorways here, many possibilities or options, or maybe it's even just fog and it's very confusing. And what is that next step? And the learning to live in this unsettledness, in the kind of the feeling of, I'm not quite sure what's next. And what we found with that is it's really important to talk about this feeling that people have about, I don't know which way to go. I don't know what's going to happen. Part of that is quite normal. It's the way, you know, it's an experience that exists for many people. And what really needs to happen when you're in that space is pausing, stopping, appreciating stillness, and listening for that small inner voice that sometimes we shut out by all our busyness and all our activity and in the frantic world that we live in. And avoiding the temptation to sort of jump back or to sidestep, to try to escape from this, but to say, no, this is okay. It's okay to feel unsettled and to stay with that a little while. And in that unsettledness, things will start to come to you. The confusion, the fog that might exist out there will start to move, and you will see the options and you get a sense of what needs to be done. This movement through this very special time called liminal space is really critical.
And this is something that everybody is in all the time. We're all in this space of traveling through, just at in different places in our lives, and in different ways. And we could talk about this for an hour and a half in itself. But I will say, if you do want to find us on LinkedIn, we have written an article about this, or like a blog post that you can go and read more in depth about the client counselor dynamic that happens as you navigate this space.
And here's one more image, and we introduced that, I think, in the last time we were with the conference group, and some of you may not have seen it, but this is the model that we're using now, that I helped develop along with Spencer Niles and June Yoon, and Andrea's been critical in terms of moving it along as well. And it's really starting from hope in the center, and we're saying that we got to start from a sense of hopefulness. We need to build out competent and hope, and not hope just as a positive feeling, but as something that is a competency, things that we actually have to do and we have to learn, and we have to engage in self-reflection and thinking about who we are and where we're headed and what's the meaning of what we're doing. We have to engage in self-clarity. How can we be clear about who we are? We have to engage in visioning in terms of, in some of the exercises we've done today have been about visioning and goal setting and planning, as well as implementing, putting things into action, and then adapting, being able to sort of shift and change and recognize the steps we want to take, but also the uncertainty that we might feel. And all of this is blown by the environment, right? That makes the pinwheel go round. So this is an important model for us, and it's how we hang a lot of the activities. We hang them on this model in different shapes. There's also an assessment that you might find interesting called the Hope Action Inventory. Again, you can find that on the website that we have. We want to leave just a couple of minutes for questions. But hopefully this is something you can explore, and we can, if there are some things people would like us to address specifically, now is the time to tell us.
This is also, we do have a training program that we run through this, the certification in Hope Action Theory and Practice. And everything you've heard today is we bring into that, the course that we run, but much more in depth. So if you're interested, feel free to just reach out and ask, and I can send you more information. You can see our emails here. Yeah, but we want to make sure we have time for questions. We have a few minutes. Lottie, I'm not sure what the best way to do this is. I know there's roving microphones out there for you. Does anyone have any questions or comments?
Thank you very much for now. We will ask if somebody has any questions. Er der nogen, der har spørgsmål, så kan de nemlig række hånden i vejret. Og så har Benny en mikrofon, og Jakob har en mikrofon. Og man må gerne stille sit spørgsmål på dansk, så skal vi se, om vi kan oversætte det. Men der kan faktisk, de kan høre, når I, hvis I stiller et spørgsmål i mikrofonen. Så det behøver ikke at gå gennem mig. Og jeg kan se, Benny har et spørgsmål. Han skal tænde mikrofonen.
If it's coming through. Now, thank you both, Norm and Andrea. We will save the cheering for later, but my question is to each of you. Who are your own personal gurus in your work? Andrea does not need to mention Norman, we know that, but we would like to know who else have influenced your work. And starting with you, Norman.
Okay, who has influenced my work? There are many influences. I think one of the things you can see in the work I do is that I am very eclectic. I started actually my work when I was working with a psychoanalyst, somebody who was a German Jewish person whose parents died in the war, and he came to Canada, and I became his protege. And so he wanted to groom me as a psychoanalyst, but I didn't quite go that way, and headed off doing many other things. But in terms of being impacted by work, I look all around me. I find theories sometimes can be too binding. And so, you know, you learn things from systems theory. And, you know, right now I'm learning from Andrea. I'm learning from the coaching perspective and the career coaching world and what she does. And so I find if I just stay open to learning and take the best of many different approaches, that works best for me.
And I would say the same thing. My background is, my first degree was in fine arts. And so I have a painting, I have my bachelor's in fine arts with a focus on painting. This is actually one of my paintings here. And so I find the same thing. Like I am constantly engaging in not only the coaching world, I also work in organizational coaching. So the ideas around team coaching and group coaching. I mean, I work with Norm. I also work with Spencer Niles, another colleague from the States. But I learn from the founder of Nike. I learn from architecture firms. I learn from graphic designers and teachers and my own children. There's not one place that I look to gather and learn from. It's really, what can I find in the world around me that I can then bring in and maybe shift a little bit or retranslate into this field of career development that we're in. Even this idea of liminal space, I initially heard from, I think it was a newsletter of an architectural firm that was talking about the way they design hallways. I thought, oh, that's an interesting concept. I bet we could learn about that over here in career development. And then we expanded the idea. And so there's not one place that is my go-to. It's rather having a collection and different resources available and books. I read all kinds of books, and I know Norm and I both are constantly, have you read this book? I just found, like, how about this book? This is a good book. So we talk about a lot of different types of books, which are really valuable. And maybe here's a question for all of you as you're listening to us, and one that I always like to
I have a question, if that is okay.
Oh, there is a question.
Yeah. Well, it's not so much a question. It was more of a comment, because now you presented a counseling method based on an approach to indigenous people. And in Denmark, of course, we have people from Greenland. But I think what I meet, at least in my counseling, is a lot of young refugees coming from Syria or Afghanistan Iraq. And we have often problems in a way of translating, translating metaphorically their life experiences to a Danish context. We have a lot of words, but in a real approach, when they need to go to school or when they need to get into the labor market, it can be really hard. Do you have any comments on that, on intercultural counseling or ways of approaching this group?
Yeah, the work we've done actually we've worked a lot with immigrants and with refugees. We ran a program for Syrian refugees, very, very successful. Another one with internationally trained health providers. So a lot of this work we've used with people from other cultures. And you're right. I mean, it isn't just about working with indigenous people. I think this is an approach that works with, broadly. And you sort of open up, though, the idea of working with pictures and images. I know in working sometimes language is an issue, and people like to use drawings. And so, again, that's another whole approach to having people draw where they've come from, draw what they want to get to. I worked with a fellow from Russia who was, and we worked primarily just with drawings, and it was difficult because language wasn't there, very strongly. But I think these more active methods, I mean, they have proven themselves over and over again, and of being very successful with immigrant and refugee groups. It brings out a new method. They like the idea of being more active, and it also gives new ways for them to sort of express themselves. Yeah.
So with that, we will say thank you very much, and we will applaud.
Thank you so much. We'll see you again
sometime.
Okay.
In the real world, maybe. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.